Hi, I'm Corey. I'm an addict.
Hi, Corey.
I want to say I'm grateful to be here today, and I was very humbled when the committee asked me to come down here and do this. I've never, you know, I've spoken in front of a lot of groups, but I've never spoken at a speaker jam before. And well, I feel humbled. So we pulled our topics before, you know, when we got here, and I was like, oh, thank God, I got an easy one. How it works. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, man, is that really easy? But it is easy. I mean, we have a book. We have a set of instructions that tells us how it works. But I think we got to go beyond that. And one of the things that I noticed as I was sitting here and looking out is like, this is how it works for me today. Addicts together in a group sharing their experience, strength, and hope. You know, without that, the book has no purpose. And without the book and the words in that and the words of our predecessors, I don't think we really have a purpose. So the two are, you know, very mutually connected. The how it worked for me was, you know, I ran around for a while and beat myself up for quite a long time. And I always knew that, you know, there was something wrong with me. Maybe not always, but as the disease progressed for me, I knew that I was different when I used from other people that I was using with. That I was always the guy who took it too far. And, you know, I was always the one that I can really think, you know, for the 14 years that I was out there, nearly every bad thing that I remember happening to me happened while I was using. And, you know, normal people today or people that aren't addicted don't have that kind of memory. You know, like, they remember bad things like people in their family dying. Well, I remember, like, getting loaded and falling and getting thrown out of a cab and pinching a nerve in my arm and not being able to use the hand that I write with for 6 weeks. And then I remember how insane I was whenever I just shrugged that off as, oh, well, those things are going to happen. You know, so when I came to the end of my road, you know, I was pretty beaten down, and I was doing things to stay high, and I couldn't even get high anymore. I just had to maintain this level of non-sickness, because I got to a point where I knew that if I stopped using, I was going to get sick, but I also knew that the stuff that I was putting in me was making me sick. And that was a really tragic circle to be in. And I didn't know that there was, I didn't know how to get out. And, you know, I spent a long time trying to figure out how I can figure this out. And finally, you know, I don't know if it was a spiritual awakening or a moment of clarity or call it whatever, but I realized that I was beaten. And that no matter how hard I tried, I wasn't going to be able to figure this thing out by myself. And I thank God, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in hospitals and a lot of time in, you know, institutions before that, getting to that point. And I don't know what it was about that particular day that I just was walking down the street, coming from the store, you know, to get some stuff, to make some stuff, to do some stuff. And I realized, like, it was a fall morning. It was about 8:30 a.m. And it was a beautiful day. And I saw people driving to work. And I just realized, like, wow, what I'm doing right now is not normal. Normal people are going to work. And I'm going back to my apartment to get fucked up at 8:30 in the morning. And there was no, like, night and day for me then or time. Like, time, I just have to remember, I don't even know why it was 8:30. I say 8:30, it might have been 10:30 for all I know. But it seemed like a lot more people were going to work than at that time than would be at 10:30. But, you know, I don't know why it happened. That's one of the things that makes me believe in a higher power today was because I had no desire to stop that day up until that point. I didn't know that that was going to be the day that I gave up, that I quit fighting myself. But it was just something about that exact moment in time and the scenery that I saw that made me realize that what I was doing to myself, I knew I was going to die. I was probably within weeks of dying. But I didn't care anymore. Like, I just didn't care. I had hit a point where I wasn't consciously trying to kill myself, but I wasn't consciously trying to live either. I just didn't care. And so I picked up the phone, and that was the first time. I didn't even know about the steps at that point. But that was the first time I think I ever worked at the first step in my life. And that's how I started to learn how this thing works. You know, so I picked up the phone, and I made some phone calls. And 2 days later, I was in a van headed to a treatment facility near Philadelphia. And I got to tell you, I really didn't know what was going to happen there. All I knew was that I just didn't want to hurt anymore. And I knew that if I kept going the way I was going, that I couldn't figure out how to make myself stop hurting. that I needed some kind of medical help. And so, you know, as I was going to this treatment facility, I really thought they were just going to teach me how to use like everybody else. I had no idea what recovery was. I had no idea what was going to happen at rehab. I was like, they'll show me some stuff and I'll be cured, right? I had no idea at that point about the disease concept, what addiction actually was. Because I really believed at that point that my problem was just drugs. That if I could stop using drugs, that I would be fine. I wanted to do a one-step program, right? I wanted to do detox and then be able to use like everybody else. And I showed up, and, you know, up until that point in my life, I had used 12-step programs or references to them as like a punchline in a joke or something. My only exposure to the 12 steps was a Seinfeld episode. And where the dude's running around making amends to everybody, and you know George is getting real mad because the guy won't make amends to him. So that was it for me. And I walked into this cat. You know, I went through all the intake, and you know, I'm scared, and I'm still high, and you know, they're telling me what's going to happen. And I walked into this cafeteria, and the first thing I saw when I walked in there, other than all the people who screamed my name and said welcome and some crazy chant that we did at this treatment facility, was the 12 steps. And I was like, oh God, not this. I'm like, this is what my life has come to. I'm going to be one of those people. And I'm not going to lie to you, like, I was really depressed. And obviously, you know, I just spent 14 years trying to kill myself. But I don't know why, man. Like, I can tell you at that point, though, my willingness to not hurt anymore was greater than my desire to save my ass or my face. You know what I mean? I was just willing. Like, I just didn't care what happened. I just didn't want to hurt. I didn't know that that meant I had to be abstinent from drugs to start. I just did not want to feel the pain of withdrawal anymore. And then I also didn't want to feel the pain of waking up every morning and not caring if the next time I go to sleep I don't wake back up. So, you know, I was still kind of arrogant and I still didn't have a clue. And I was planning on doing this treatment thing for about, I wanted to do the detox thing. And I was like, oh, listen, man, I know, I kicked my ass. I'm good. You just get me detox and I got to go. Plus, one of my friends was getting married in like 3 days. And I was like, hey, look, I got to make it to this wedding, right? This is important. And, yeah, I was really crazy. And, you know, somebody during that time, like, they let the people in detox go to, like, the classes and stuff that the other people went to, that the actual patients went to. And, you know, I'd spent the 48 hours or 72 hours that I was there until I actually started listening to these classes, trying to figure out how I was different than everybody else there and why I didn't belong there. Why my problem was really just drugs. I didn't need 12 steps. And I'm a pretty smart guy, and 12 steps weren't going to work for me anyway. I would need, like, at least 36. And so I was there, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, well, I never, you know, I never slept under a bridge, and I never, you know, sold myself, and I never did this, and I never did that. And so this guy's way worse than me, you know. He belongs here. I don't. And somebody handed me a book during this time. And at this treatment facility, I mean, we were not allowed contact with the outside world. The only thing that you could read was recovery literature or religious texts. And there was no music, no TV, no news, no nothing. And that's exactly what I needed at that point in time in my life. But somebody handed me this book, and it was our book, one of our books. And I started reading it, and up until that point, like, I couldn't believe that somebody had to write an entire book that's that big about how to stop using drugs. I mean, just stop, right? That's simple. But I started reading it, and I started reading the words in it, and you know, all those crazy thoughts that I had held on to all my life, and all that shame and all that guilt and all the shit that I did and all the ways that I thought that I couldn't talk to anybody about because I was ashamed of, those words were in the book. And my first instinct was to be like, holy shit, I thought I was crazy for having these thoughts. These people wrote this stuff down and took credit for it. They're really crazy. But then I started to feel this thing, like I started listening to the people in the center, and I started to realize that, like, I wasn't alone. Like, that I wasn't the only person who obsessed about things to a point where the only way to stop the obsession was to go use drugs. Or, you know, just all the stuff that we do. And so I started listening. And it didn't take too long after that to realize that I wasn't going to make it to that wedding if I wanted to live. So I made the decision. It was up to me. I made the decision that I would stay for the full treatment. And again, I think that was the second time in my life that I made, that I worked the first step thoroughly. Because I surrendered to the fact at that point that I was an addict. And that my problem wasn't drugs. My problem was me and the way I think. And that drugs were a symptom of a much larger problem. And that the reason it's not a one-step program is because, well, I think I just said that. But anyway, so as any good addict would do, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know about you guys, but whenever I do something, I don't have a halfway. Like, I either do it full on or I don't do it. And I suffer from, and you know, I used to hesitate to say this because, like, I thought it made me sound arrogant, but now I realize, like, after working a six-step and a four-step, that it's a horrible character defect. Like, I suffer from perfectionism. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to do this thing, then I'm going to do it. And so I just jumped in with both feet. And, I mean, I started reading the book every night. And I don't know how many times I read the basic text when I was in rehab, but it was a lot. And I started to try to live this way, and I started listening. You know, the text there and the counselors there were like messiahs to me almost. Like, whatever they said, I wrote everything down. I filled up like four notebooks in those 28 days that I was actually in treatment. I mean, I had it memorized. And I thought, you know, I thought I was doing good. And up until about 2 days or 2 hours before I was supposed to get discharged, right, because treatment was probably one of the easiest times in my recovery. All I had to do was not leave, and they would keep me from using drugs. About 2 hours before I went to leave, though, I realized, like, holy shit, it's going to get real. They're going to send me outside this fence and outside these walls, and now I got to do this stuff on my own. And I remember begging my favorite tech, Harry, to come with me, and he was like, no, I can't do that. Not even for a couple days. So I had to start doing it. So I did exactly what they told me to do. I went to a meeting my first day, and I got phone numbers. And I had a little bit of willingness. And I found some guys that looked like they were doing this thing, and I clung to them for dear life because I started wanting to live again. And I started to live this thing. And I started to learn about the steps. And I started to learn about how it works. And so how it works is, for me today, you know, the first step is I know I'm an addict. And I know that I want to do insane things. And probably the most insane thing I could do would be pick up a drug, because I know for a fact what's going to happen if I do that. You know, I make a lot of poor decisions and act out on self-will a lot. But the one thing that I haven't done since that time in treatment was pick back up, because I know for a fact I do not want to test that water anymore. I have surrendered to the fact that I am an addict. So I don't go to, you know, we say this all the time, and I used to get sick of hearing it, people, places, and things. But there's a reason why people keep saying that. Because in my short time in this program, the one thing that I've seen people take the most people out is not surrendering to and doing the first step completely. You know, like, oh, okay, I won't pick back up, but I'm going to hang out with my old friends. Right? We just talked to a kid about this last night. Wow, and then the dude comes back to the meeting the next day and says, yeah, I hung out with these guys, and I feel real fucked up today. And it's like, well, and I did this myself because I was stupid back then. I did things in my first month of recovery that I would never even consider doing today because I thought I was special. I thought I was a snowflake. I didn't think that all the rules applied to me yet. But, you know, the dude comes in like, I feel real fucked up. I was hanging out with these guys, and they were using drugs all day. And I was cool, but, you know, like, I didn't use or anything, but and we had a good time, but I don't know. I just feel really weird now. Well, I'd probably feel pretty weird, too, if I hung around a bunch of people who were using drugs for 8 hours and, you know, not really doing this thing. That's why I don't hang out with people like that today. I don't go to bars today. I don't go to crack houses today. You know, that's just insane. So I just, you know, that first step, I know for a fact there are so many things, little things that I have fought about this program, tooth and nail, and things with my sponsor, when I first came in that I just don't do anymore. Because I know what that, it's not going to work. I believe wholeheartedly that this program, you know, that these suggestions are there not to punish me, but to save my life. And so I moved on to the second step, and that was a tough one for me. Because, you know, I always had a higher power. I always believed, I forgot about my higher power while I was out there at the end. You know, I forgot that there might be somebody that I can ask for help that's greater than me. But I had a real hard time with that word insane, or sanity. You know what I mean? Like, I always had this idea of what insane people were, and it was not me, right? I was a college student. Like, I had graduated once. I was getting a graduate degree, you know? Like, I'm not crazy. Insane people were locked in padded rooms and straitjackets and drool on themselves and, you know, talk about conspiracies and living on different planets. That's not what I do. But somebody pointed out to me that insanity is doing the same thing, just what Eric read. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah. Because I can't tell you how many times I picked up a drug and said, I'm just going to do a little bit tonight because I got too loaded last night. And I would start with that. On a daily basis, I did that every day. And when I look back now, it's almost funny to consider how many times I, really thought that I could control my using. And not only did I think that, like, I really believed that. Like, I believed that I could. That it was something else that was making me use all those drugs. I wasn't making the decision to do that. You know, it wasn't until the very end that I finally realized, like, I'm not going to be able to do this. So, like, that process of the second step, you know, before I always hear people go through that and say about, like, when they're on their second step, they're like, I'm having a hard time picking my higher power. I'm having a hard time picking my higher power. I'm like, wow, that's ridiculous. You shouldn't. I mean, you don't have to nail one down for the rest of your life. Like, if you don't pick the right one now, well, you're screwed. You got to have that one for the rest of your life. You know, we're free to choose a higher power of our own understanding. Mine changes on a daily basis. Right now, like, this room full of addicts is probably my higher power. But, I'm like, when I hear that, I tell them, like, I think you're missing the point. I think the point is that you have to admit that you are insane. Believe that. And then believe that whatever higher power you have at any given time can restore you to sanity. And it took me a while. But today, like, I have no doubt nothing could come up in my life that I can't turn to find the answers for in this program. You know? And I know, I also have no doubt that it would be insane for me to use over something and think that that would somehow make it better. 5 minutes of instant gratification is not worth the serenity that I've worked for so many years to get today. It was time to move on to the third step, and I think that's the one that I probably struggle with on the most, you know, frequent, daily basis, all the time. Because I'm a control freak. I want to control everything. And I didn't realize that until I did my fourth step. And even as I did my fourth step and my fifth step, and my sponsor pointed that out to me, I was like, no, no. I was trying to control his response. I'm like, I don't think that I'm a control freak. I'm like, let me tell you how I think this is, you know. But it's not my job to get rid of my character defects. It's just my job to be aware of them. And so the third step gives me a lot of relief when I think about that. You know, that whole made a decision thing. Yeah, it's easy to make a decision to turn my will and my life over. But it's just as easy for me to almost instinctively make a decision to take it back. You know, I don't know how to turn everything over. I have a hard time with that. But I know that every good thing... yeah, I was just talking about this the other day. When I'm turning stuff over and when I'm working that third step, my God, is my life so much easier. I'm not fighting myself. Life is just so easy. And again, going back to insanity, like I choose to take it back and things immediately get harder. And I know what that feels like. Like I have a physical feeling with that. But you know, I guess what I'm trying to say, and I guess why I know and I can guarantee and why I have no doubt, why I believe today, somewhere in the book it says, you know, hope becomes faith, faith becomes belief, whatever, faith becomes knowledge. Like when I look back over my life since I've been clean, the reason why I know I have a higher power that I need to turn over my problems to is because every good thing that's happened to me since I've been in recovery, and I can tell you that a lot of good things have happened to me since I've been in recovery. Very few bad things that would actually be bad. But every good thing, if I look back through at how those things came to be, and I take a step back and I get really honest, I had almost absolutely nothing to do with all the good things that have happened in my life today. I have just gotten out of the way and let somebody else take what's mine to give, which is my life. So, you know, I'm going to wrap this up, but those first three steps are how it works for me today, and, like, being in here is how it works. If you want to hear about 4 through 12, you should probably get a sponsor and talk to them about it. No. But, you know, in closing, like, I do want to say that this is how it works for me most is this. Spending time with other addicts and realizing that I'm never alone in my life ever again. You know what I mean? Like, I went through 14 years of active addiction thinking I was the only person on the planet who thought and felt the way I did. And I believed that. Like I said, I really believed that. And thank God that somebody handed me a book when I was in treatment that got me to stay there. And thank God I got some willingness and started sharing my feelings, because it is not instinctive. It's not natural for me to talk about how I feel. But because of that, like, I know that today, like I said, no matter what comes up in my life, as long as I remember that I can come to a place like this and talk to any single one of you people about it, as long as I get honest, then I'll be able to get through it. So, thanks.